Welcome to the 60th episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name's Drew Ogrizek.
And I'm Alex Moxon.
How was your week, Alex?
It was pretty good. How was yours, Drew?
It was great. So I had, actually, I don't know if it was great. It was an interesting week. I think we did a lot of catch up with work, and we kind of started to incorporate some things that we probably should have a long time ago, but being in startup mode, we were just kind of going forward and getting features pushed out the door really quick. Mm-hmm. But we had a chance to kind of go back and automate some testing into our build process, which we should have had from, you know, a lot more of from the beginning, maybe. But because things were changing so quickly and because we just didn't spend the time on it, we've got some really big wins, I think, with fairly minimal effort once we got the ball rolling and kind of jumped into a good pattern with that. Now we have sort of the idea that we won't be accepting pull requests, and we'll be rejecting them if we don't see the specs with them, and there's no reason not to have them, which is finally a great step.
Nice.
And another thing was we realized the onboarding process could use a lot of work. It hadn't been an issue before because we hadn't onboarded anyone, mm-hmm. but now it did become one. So I spent some time with that. We took a look at things like in our local development environment, should it be, you know, one command, two commands, three commands, 100 commands, 1 minute, 10 minutes, an hour, 5 days, 10 days mm-hmm. to get set up. And we kind of tried to make it as easy and painless as possible. Some of the pain points we hit were, you know, our developers are on, some of them are on Windows, some of them are on Mac. Nobody's actually on Linux right now, even though our infrastructure is Linux.
Okay.
And anyway, so we hit a lot of pain points with, even though we have Dockerized services, and kind of the point, or one of the benefits of that is it should just be, we should be able to just get running regardless of the environment. Mm-hmm. So now we are, which is great. And then we looked at seed data and what that should be, what that looks like, you know, what we actually need for development versus what's in production.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, if you got on Linux, things would be a whole lot smoother. Just saying.
Well, yeah, I actually, so I had initially asked for a Dell that I was planning on dual booting mm-hmm. because a lot of the developers I work with do run Windows.
Yeah.
But I actually got given a Mac. Oh. And so I decided to just use that. It's interesting that you said if you were on Linux, things would run a lot smoother. Mm-hmm. What sort of things would run smoother?
Well, good question. As I'm getting into development, I'm finding that things run a whole lot smoother on Linux in general. My system used to be on Windows, and it was really slow. It crashed all the time. Now it's pretty seamless. It boots up in a matter of seconds rather than a matter of minutes. It's just a lot more efficient.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I haven't really noticed or had many pain points with Mac that would be resolved by Linux. Some of the biggest ones being like default versions of Bash, for example, are a little bit outdated, but mm-hmm. that's pretty easily resolved by updating. And yeah, I mean, other than that, not really much. There's so much stuff, I don't know, kind of unfortunately, there's so much stuff in a lot of development communities that are sort of Mac specific. I think a lot in Ruby as well, although there's absolutely no, I've had no problems. I spent time working on in Linux as well, had mm-hmm. no problems with that. So I'd highly recommend it.
Nice.
So something else that I, that kind of came up this week that I thought was kind of interesting, the use of guys in kind of work context. And a lot of people will point out, I say guys all the time. My female friends say guys.
I say guys all the time.
Sure. And there's different contexts, and whether, you know, you say that and you're female, whether that means that's okay or not, I think it's quite debatable. Hmm. But when we look at it in context, is there a difference between hey guys, the new guys, and Ruby guys?
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are these the same? Is that the same guys?
I think so. I don't know. I am really strongly wanting to promote women in tech, and I want to talk a little bit more about that as we continue. However, I think we've become really sensitive to terminology. So things like, hey, you guys, all of a sudden is offensive when you don't really mean anything by it. So I don't know. It's a careful balance, I think. I think you have to be really careful when you are constantly editing your words in order to say the thing that's not going to offend everyone in the room. Sometimes you just have to say what's on your mind. And as long as you're not saying that in a mean or degrading way or a way where you're intentionally being exclusionary, I don't think there's a problem. I mean, yeah, call me out on that, whatever you think, but I think that's my own feeling.
That's actually often the argument that people make. Mm-hmm. And I think the counterpoint to that, one thing is, it's not necessarily that extreme that you have to be watching every single thing that you say and that you can't speak to anybody. Just because you're conscious, there's a lot that can be done. And I think it's a huge win to look at something very small that we use all the time, like guys. Mm-hmm. The problem with saying, you know, oh, I say this and I don't mean anything bad by it. I've heard terms like, you know, oh, that's a Polish invention. I felt bad saying something about it. I've thought about this. Should I just start hitting people when I hear them say that? Should I say something really reactionary? Should I just grin and bear it? Should I point it out? And I've had people where I have pointed that out and I said, you know, I find that offensive. I really don't like that. And they don't stop. They're like, oh, I don't mean anything by it. In my opinion, it's horrible. It's psychologically degrading. And I often wonder, you know, just because somebody doesn't have this intention, but they're spreading negativity or hate or exclusive behavior, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean it's okay. And I think that if we pay attention to that and we actually note it, then we can have like a really huge win. Now, on the other hand, maybe going too far would be something. I'm definitely not perfect. I'm trying to be conscious of things. You know, if I say to one, a developer that I work with, hey, let's go grab a beer. That might have different connotations if that's a male developer versus a female developer. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right when you say, you know, we don't want to put ourselves in a place where everything becomes awkward and we have to think about everything. But maybe we should be a little bit conscious sometimes.
I think you raise a really good point. And I think maybe what might be a good idea is having a list of, find out those terms that bother a lot of people and are polarizing, and maybe put up a list of 10 of them. Like, these are things we just don't say at work. Instead of saying guys, say people, or say things like that. Maybe something like that might help raise awareness, or at least show that the company's open to addressing things like that.
What if it's just that one word? When you say a list of 10, what if that's it? You know, when we say like there's this big extreme that it might push us to, what if it's just simply changing the use of one term?
Maybe somebody could write a program where it automatically, when it sees guys, it changes it to people.
So
I don't know.
If I say I went out with the guys last night, mm-hmm. or I went out with some guys last night, or look at those guys, do you think that's a group of females or a group of mixed?
I honestly feel like I don't see gender in those terms. And then you've also got other things like transgendered people. Mm-hmm. What's the appropriate thing to say there, right? Mm-hmm. So
I think people works very well in all of those situations.
Yeah, maybe we should move more to people. But we're definitely interested in, if anyone has thoughts on that, definitely shoot us an email. And we'd love to hear your feedback.
So how about you, Alex? How was your week?
My week was really good. So I want to talk about one of the meetups I went to, which was really awesome. But first, I want to talk a little bit about my coding progress. So I'm focused on tutorials and reading on Git and Node. So there's a few different things that I'm doing there. My Node book is 400 pages. Nice light read, right?
Mm-hmm. That's quite a bit, actually.
It's by Mario Cascario. So it's a really interesting book so far. And it will probably take me a month or so to go through because I've got a bunch of other things that are on the go. But that's my plan.
Very cool. So what have you gone through with that so far?
It's been pretty high level, just kind of getting acquainted with the landscape of Node and what it is as a framework.
So what sorts of things?
I'm going to defer to answer that until next week, and I'm going to instead talk about Git.
Great.
So GitHub for Beginners, Don't Get Scared, Get Started is something that I first read. I thought that was a really good article. I talk more about it in my blog, which I'll publish in the show notes below. It's good because it was written in 2013 when GitHub wasn't fully adopted everywhere. And from there, I'm reading ProGit, which is the everything you need to know around Git. So I'm on chapter 2 of that, working through how to branch and how to clone and how to commit and all those other things.
Very cool.
So it's a lot of fun.
I think Git can be really powerful. And I guess you get to work with Adam quite a bit, who mm-hmm. I think is pretty good with Git. A good person to, I know I definitely leaned on him quite a bit for some Git knowledge.
Very cool.
How about meetups? What did you get to?
So I went to the inaugural Women Who Code Vancouver event last Thursday, and it was amazing. Nice. There were a group of about 70 women engineers. It was hosted at Microsoft in the garage, And what an awesome event. They're going to have one every month. Mm-hmm. I know that we had Holly on. I wasn't there for the interview, but I listened to the show, and she's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. We also, interestingly, had Stacy on a few months ago as well. We should probably have both of them back on at some point. But yeah, tell me about that.
Definitely. So one of Holly's goals was to get to, I think it was 1,000 members. So already they're over 300. And I think they're revising that goal to have more members by the end of the year.
That's pretty amazing.
I don't want to sign up numbers to those, but let's just say it'll be really awesome. So speakers were Stacy from Microsoft, and she mm-hmm. talked about Beyond the Browser, which is basically about software and hardware integration and the cool things you can make by using JavaScript and other languages. Next up was Emilia Harjasa, and she was talking about data science and what it means to be a data scientist, how it's a relatively new field, I guess. And I mean, it's basically applied statistics and being able to read meaning into those statistics and not, I guess, remove your own cognitive bias and actually let the numbers speak. One of the challenges, though, is that there's not a lot of data. So people think, oh, we'll just hire a data scientist to, you know, create all these awesome metrics. But you need a lot of data in order to be able to tell you what's actually going on. Otherwise, a lot of it is kind of a gut and judgment call mm-hmm. based on what you're seeing and what overall trends you're seeing. And I remember that myself from statistics back in university. A lot of it is just, well, there's a slight correlation here. Maybe that means something. But unless you've got a number of repeat data patterns, it doesn't really tell you an awful lot. So that's the challenge. And I think being a data scientist in an organization, yeah, I think it's a challenge because the company has an idea of what they want, but they kind of don't. Because it's a newer discipline, it's a definite challenge there.
That's interesting. I was over at Boeing. They had an open house, not this week. So this is a couple months ago, a few mm-hmm. months ago. I can't mm-hmm. really remember now. But a lot of the stuff that they were doing was very much data science. And they do have a fair amount of data.
Yep.
And so that seemed like they had some pretty interesting challenges to solve and some really interesting sort of real world situations. Okay. How did the rest of the meetup go?
It was just really great. There was lots of networking. I made some awesome contacts, and it's definitely, I joined up to be part of Women Who Code.
Very cool.
So I'd like to get very involved with them and see what we can do as a community and see what partnerships there are there. But
so
yeah,
I have a question regarding that. Were there any men there or guys? Was it all guys? Yeah, because I kind of thought, like, that's a really interesting and cool-looking meetup, mm-hmm. but, ooh, I shouldn't go to that.
There actually weren't. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what they want to do going forward, if it's all going to be, like, women-focused. Mm-hmm. I believe that there's interest in creating more of a social event where it'll mm-hmm. be mixed, which I think is good. And that brings me to one of my final points, is uh-huh. I want to achieve... So, we've had two female guests on mm-hmm. in January. So, I'd like to actually have gender parity on mm-hmm. the show. So, that means a 50-50 split of female and male guests. So that's one of my personal goals too.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I think that would really be something achievable. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's up to us to schedule. But it sounds really good.
Yeah, absolutely. So if there's any women out there in tech who are interested in being on the show, definitely reach out to us. We'd love to talk with you and see if we can have you on.
Yeah, for sure. So I went to... what meetups did I go to? I went to, actually, I think running concurrently with Women Who Code in mm-hmm. the same building, mm-hmm. I went to Coding Coffee.
Nice.
And that was pretty cool. There was a good presentation from Saya, I think was her handle.
Okay.
And so she did a really interesting presentation on sort of rapid prototyping. And this has been somewhat of, I don't know, an ongoing theme in my life over the past little while of hearing a lot about rapid prototyping. And I thought that was kind of neat. But so the point was with her, she kind of went over like the four different steps in prototyping, starting out with design and sort of the discussion around that. Mm-hmm. And she said, you want to go through that kind of as quickly as possible to kind of get to the next stage, which is like the wireframing, and then you start to put in maybe some of the transitions and things like that, and then you finalize the design. Mm-hmm. But the reason you want to get through the discussion phase as quickly and early as possible is because you want to have some discussion around, you know, what should this be, what should this look like, so mm-hmm. you have something to actually, you know, mock up in the wireframing session. But you want to get to that feedback stage as quickly as possible, and I thought that was really interesting. Even when, like, regardless of what you're building or what you're looking at, mm-hmm. that seems to be the ongoing thing. Get to that feedback stage. And if your feedback is only the developers in the room, mm-hmm. maybe rethink that. That's not what she said. That's something that I'm just saying, because I'm starting to notice a lot of, you know, developers in meetings, having conversations, design sessions, and not getting feedback from outside of that room.
Right.
And I think that can be kind of maybe not the best approach.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's important to have the business involved and make sure that you're always solving the business goals with your technology and not just creating some cool new tech, which is fun to do. But yeah, that's something that we do at AdaptTech, is work with businesses and make sure that we are solving around that core problem. So
very cool.
Yeah.
So what about meetups coming up this week? I've got a couple that I'm pretty interested in. How about you?
Yeah. Well, why don't you talk about the one on January 23rd? Because I'm really excited to go to that one too.
Yeah, we've got the Vancouver Tech Meetup. Brian Clark from Mozilla coming out, and we'll be looking at the Debugger HTML project, which I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at some of the bugs and the features. They have some really great documentation.
Nice.
So regardless of your level, if you've got some React skills, maybe even if not, if you've used a browser before and you can, you've debugged using a browser, then this will probably be a good meetup for you. I'm not sure what sort of levels to expect, but I do anticipate having maybe pairs or tables with people ranging from senior to intermediate to junior and mentors around to help out. So nice. I'm really excited about this one and really looking forward to that. Obviously. Mm-hmm. That's over, by the way, at Beanworks, which is very cool. And I think they're hiring for a product manager, I believe, right now, maybe some other roles. But they've got some really cool space. So really looking forward to that.
Yeah, we had Reza on the show before the break, and he was an excellent guest.
So the other ones that I'm kind of pretty excited about this week, there's a Lunch and Learn on Shred. That's over at Istuary. So I'd kind of like to go to that because I haven't been to a Lunch and Learn in a while, haven't been in Istuary for a while. And then there's another one that I'm actually super excited about, which is the Vancouver Erlang and Elixir meetup.
Nice.
So that looks like it'll be a lot of fun. That's coming up on Tuesday, and that's over at CodeCore, 142 West Hastings at 6 p.m.
Awesome.
There is a wait list because it's going to be super popular. How about you?
So there's two other ones that I would like to talk about. Canada Futurists one at the Creative Coworkers. So the organizer is my friend Nicholas Badminton. He's going to be on the show in early February. So he'll be talking about the 2017 predictions in tech. The next that I'll be going to is the DDD CQRS event storming meetup. I'm going to be at both of those, and I'm looking forward to them.
Very cool. See ya at the meetups around town. And we're here with our special guest, Rob Vucci, CEO of StatSearch Analytics. Thanks for being on, Rob.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to have you. So before I met you, I actually saw a video of you giving a talk at a Tech Vancouver meetup, and I thought that was really cool. You had a pretty interesting background, I think, and at one point you, as an adult, decided to move into your mom's basement and learn to code.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Yeah. How was that? How was that experience? Had you had any coding experience before?
When I was younger, I was into like just HTML kind of things. Mm-hmm. Really, really basic though. Like no server-side anything, right? And then I graduated with this fine arts degree, and I was like, I'm not prepared for adult life at all. So I thought, well, how am I going to make money? And I thought, well, I'm going to learn how to write code. So I had very little prep though for that.
So something that really impressed me, there were a couple of things that impressed me about that, by the way, but one thing was, I don't know if I'd say like the sheer audacity of that thought or the confidence, you know, I'm just going to learn to code. Boom, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it's naivete, really. Like, it's what it is like not knowing what is hard or impossible is actually kind of a benefit when you couple that with just like drive, you know? So many times I'd throw myself against a problem that I would later learn to be a very, very difficult problem. But at the time it was like, well, I'm just going to try to figure this out. I didn't know enough to know that it was something I shouldn't try doing.
Right. Which is pretty awesome, I guess. And so fast forward a little bit, that ended up becoming actually even not too far. You started making money from it.
Yeah, I was actually in the early days really focused on being able to make money as early as possible from the skill, because the skill was like, it's a passion. I have these incredible flow moments in programming, but really it was like, how do I have an adult career? So I really was quickly trying to translate what I was learning into a money-making venture.
Right.
Yeah.
So what were your ideas? What did you start with? Did the first thing, did you throw it to the wall and it stuck?
No, I mean, the very first thing that I ever built as a programming project was actually like a spam engine, which I'm not really super proud of, I would say. But it was the idea was that you could spin on like 100 WordPress blogs and create random content from like Mad Lib scripts. Mm-hmm. You know, Mad Lib's the game. It was kind of like that, where it would spin out unique content. And that was fun. And I was selling it to like kind of shady marketers. And that taught me a little bit about software service and subscriptions and credit card fees and all that, as well as programming. But that never really took off, right? Mm-hmm. But what emerged from that was one feature that became my later business.
And what was that?
The feature was the ability to track the visibility of content in the search engines. Very so if I was creating content, I had to help people track whether or not it was ranking. Mm-hmm. And then that feature became Stat.
Right. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. How did you identify that as being a bread-winning idea?
It was a really challenging technology problem, and it was one that was like a problem shared by everyone who deals with anything related to Google. Like, everyone needs to know if what they're doing is working and mm-hmm. if they're improving their visibility over time. So it was like a broad enough problem that when I talked about it, everyone was like, oh yeah, I have this problem. And so I realized, okay, there's an opportunity here.
Very cool. Going back a little before that, when you thought, you know, I'm going to learn to code, what did you think to begin with? How did you choose? What were the initial steps like?
Yeah, okay, so early on, it's kind of a long time ago and hard to remember really clearly what my thought process was, and it probably wasn't very, like, well thought out. I tend to dive into things all the time. I was researching, like, the hot programming languages at the time, and what I knew was that things like C and Java were kind of intimidating, right? But Ruby was like really easy to read. Like, you know, instead of incrementing a counter of like a variable I to go through a loop, you just go 10 dot times do. And I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense. Right. So for a neophyte outsider, I just picked that up really quickly. And then for me, like, I'm a big fan of self-teaching or self-learning. I'm kind of unteachable. and if I make something like a project that has a goal that's real, i.e. I wanted to make money, that focused all of my learning intent. So like from the early days, I wasn't doing theoretical stuff. I was actually doing things that I could sell immediately. Mm-hmm. Nice. And that was scraping data was my early stuff. And that's how I learned how to write code.
Right. Yeah. Very cool. And so I guess actually in that kind of case, having a bit of an interest and a background in HTML was probably pretty helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
You had an idea of what was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I had to learn about XPath selectors and all that stuff. It was like, what? But and like, I still can't do regex for the life of me. but yeah, absolutely. Knowing basic HTML markup and structure helped me figure out how to like extract something. Like, let's say I was going to NFL.com and extracting like NFL statistics. I knew how to pull that out of divs and things like that. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so then you took that and you kind of had the idea of looking at analytics and telling people how well they ranked. How long ago was this?
So the very first prototypes of Stat were built in 2009, and it's really morphed. Like, the intention of the company and what we stand for is morphed over time. But back then it was just, I just want to tell people if they're number one or number two or number 10 in the Google search results and how that's changed over time. And the concept of like what time series data was and all that wasn't really obvious to me. And it kind of, I learned it as I went, right? But the original goal was just like, I want to tell people how visible they are. And then it became a bit deeper, like, what does that data mean? And that's sort of the stuff we're focusing on nowadays.
Very cool. So was there even a transition from sort of developing an idea to leading a business?
Yeah, and it was really awkward. it was not at all graceful, and it was full of, you know, setbacks, but it was challenging because you do something and you do it well enough that it makes you somewhat successful. And the reward for that success is you have to stop doing that thing that made you successful and find other ways to be successful. Mm-hmm. Because you can no longer apply the original skill that got you to where you are because you have to scale. Right. And like stepping back from writing code and learning how to manage people was just like, it was so painful. It was painful for me and everyone I was working with, I think. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I worked with really great people, and I'm also like, I didn't try to pretend I was something that I'm not, and so everyone was really patient with me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that, I could imagine there would be a lot of issues with just going from one thing to another and trying to manage people. But on the other hand, I've kind of got the sense that Stat Analytics has a really cool culture, at least strives to, and you've also recently opened up a really cool new office?
Yeah, yeah, in Railtown.
Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, we have this great event space in Railtown, and it's part of our office. So it's like we have a 10,000 square foot warehouse space that we've converted. So the main floor is all open plan work areas, and then we have a mezzanine where we're doing events. Mm-hmm. And it was really like, it was the platform on which we wanted to sort of escape orbit, as a company, right? So it felt really grown up and really scary. And now that we're in there, it doesn't feel grown up or scary anymore. It just feels like a lot of fun. But it's a great space, yeah.
Very cool. So what about the culture, the work culture? Is it a corporate culture? Is it a fun culture? Is it a business culture?
Yeah, it's a fun culture. I mean, it's definitely a high ambition kind of culture. Mm-hmm. We're one where people really value high quality work. But I have a big chip on my shoulder. I never set out to start a company. So I have no desire to build an empire. I have no desire to ring a bell on NASDAQ. So when faced with that reality, you go, okay, what kind of company do I want to build? And what I wanted to build was an oddball company that really put people first, where people felt like they were valued and they weren't just cogs spinning in a machine. That's really, really important to me. So the culture is kind of an abused word, right? And I really struggled with early on, what does it mean? Because I didn't want to come down like Moses from the mountaintop with a marble tablet and say, these are our cultural values. That didn't feel authentic. Mm-hmm. So culture kind of emerged over time. And I mean, if you don't mind, I can go in a little bit deeper about culture is an emergent phenomenon. And every time you hire somebody, you are dictating your culture, whether you realize it or not, because they bring something to the fabric. Mm-hmm. At some point when you're around 10 plus people, it probably becomes important to codify that in some way, because once it's codified, those cultural values become boundaries for behavior, or allow people to understand how they can act with autonomy and what's expected of them. So I didn't want to come down with a marble tablet and say, everyone, listen, this is what we believe as people. So what we did was everyone went on their own and took their own values and wrote them down on post-it notes. And then they did that in the evening. They came to the office the next day and we put them up on the wall, and everyone's individual values are up there. And what we did was draw a thread of the common values that connected all the people in the team. And what we realized is that we already had culture. We already had all this overlap in our individual values. And so we pulled those out and we recast them as how they would apply to a business. And then we said, that's our culture. Mm-hmm. And then the interesting shift is from that point forward, there's a before that meeting and after that meeting kind of time, because the people that were there for that meeting are the ones who brought their culture that was innate to them to the business. Mm-hmm. After it was codified, it's now a tool for hiring, right? So now you're looking for people to slot into that. But it was very authentic, and it helped the people to really get on side with it and believe in it.
That's pretty interesting. So as you're talking about culture, one of the thoughts and the questions that I was going to have was, how do you keep a culture after a certain number of people? Mm-hmm. But that sounds like a really interesting way. So when you get to about 10 people or so, which is kind of a sweet point, I think, for culture, mm-hmm. If you happen to be lucky enough, or I don't know if lucky is the right word, but to have the right sort of team that just really meshes together, then maybe that's a good time to, like you said, codify that culture and then use that as a hiring tool. So do you find that really helps to keep the culture? Now, you also said people first. What does that mean?
Okay. So that's kind of like a meaningless phrase unless you put some weight behind it. So I have this concept of what I call spreadsheet companies. These are companies that manage their business purely by the numbers. And the way they scale those businesses is every single person is a replaceable part, replaceable auto parts, for example, right? Standardization. Right. And that means everyone's a cog and they can be switched out and replaced with somebody else who does the exact same function. And if I say to myself, you know what, I don't want to build a business that scales to 300 people, then that means that I can't just have cogs. I have to have individuals who have unique talents that bring something to the table. And in order to keep them, the business has to give something to them. Because if they're not just cogs, they have real super skills that they could go apply anywhere. So I focus a lot on how people are going to look back one day at their time at Stat and go, man, that was a great company to be a part of. And I want a sign of success for me 10 years from now will be if I hear people talking about them being Stat alumnus, mm-hmm. And they came from this company and it helped them do something big. And so I really focus on that. And so how that manifests itself in terms of being a people first company is me looking for all these opportunities to give people exposure to the things that they're going to help them do great things in the future, mm-hmm. whether it's coaching or sending them to conferences, getting them extra training, or just giving them opportunities to take really risky, crazy ideas and run with them, that sort of stuff.
Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So did you mention that Stat was hiring?
Yeah, absolutely. We are. Man, we're hiring for so many roles right now. We have one of the more complex distributed data collection systems probably in Vancouver, and we want people to come join that data services team. So it's an awesome challenge. We're working with Scala and Ruby, and we're doing massive scale data collection on a 24-hour cycle with near like 100% uptime requirement. so it's like, it's real. And we're hiring there. We're also hiring in the marketing side. We're hiring creatives. We're hiring copywriters. We're hiring campaign specialists. And the two biggest roles that I'm looking for right now are a software development manager and a team lead for our web app team. So if anyone is interested in those roles, they should go to our website at getstat.com and take a look.
Very cool. We'll put a link down below in the podcast cool. as well. Now, you also mentioned a mezzanine.
Yeah.
How do you say that?
Mezzanine.
I don't know why.
We call mezzanine. It the mezz.
Okay, yeah. Mezz. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you have that for events. What sort of events might you have? Do you have any coming up?
Yeah, we do. So we have a monthly Inbound Vancouver event, which is like inbound marketers and SEOs all get together, and there's a different talk every month. And so that one is coming up on January the 31st. And actually, there's a fellow from Status Bureau who's giving a talk where I think it's called like Rankings Are Wrong, or I think he actually uses a swear word, which I can't use in the title, but he's talking about how people should not just rely purely on rankings, which is funny because that's what we do, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat to have him in the house talking about that. We also have a pipeline, a meeting coming up on February 23rd, which is for distributed systems and data pipelines.
Those sound really awesome. But when you mentioned the not relying on rankings,
yeah.
I immediately thought of Netflix. I don't know. Do you watch Netflix?
Yeah, we work with them too. Yeah.
Do you pay any attention to the ratings that they have, the stars?
No.
No? Okay. I totally do. And
do
I
you?
Don't know why or if I should. And I've just started thinking recently, maybe I shouldn't. Is there a way to turn that off so I can just choose for myself?
I think that the stars are not universal. The stars are per person. Mm-hmm. So like it's a star for you. It's like a suggested rating for you.
Right.
So I try to train their system by like rating things that I like or don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that there's enough nuance in five stars for me to be able to rely on it to pick something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Somebody's going to think, you know, five star, their version of amazing is going to be totally different from somebody else's.
Yeah, you're right. Totally.
When is that meetup?
That meetup for Inbound Marketing Vancouver is January 31st.
I don't know if you've heard of the Vancouver Tech Meetup. We have that somewhat regularly, and the goal is to connect developers and have them pair up and solve problems. Maybe we can team up together and have a Vancouver Tech Meetup at STAT and get some people working on some cool things.
We'd love that.
Awesome.
We'd love that. You know what I'm really interested in? Amazon just opened up that Alexa voice API,
mm-hmm.
and I would just love for an excuse to hack on that.
Nice.
Like, all the different things you can connect that to would be so cool.
It does sound like something, like some sort of hackathon or something
based on
that.
Yeah.
Sounds like it would be some really cool things. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about STAT and checking out the space at some time. What does STAT have sort of on the plan for 2017?
Yeah, in 2017, there's a lot of hiring for us. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one. We're right now like a 32-person team. We'll probably exit the year close to 50.
Mm-hmm.
So that's scary and giant and awesome.
Yeah.
We're in terms of like what we're doing as a company, we're doing a lot more traveling this year and sending people to different conferences to get people more exposure.
Nice.
And then, as you know, in terms of what we're building in our product, our focus is turning data into meaning or unlocking insight in data. And that's sort of the next level down. And that's where the challenges get interesting. So we're not just pulling data and regurgitating it for our customers, but we're actually transforming it and somehow aggregating it and saying, okay, this is the data and here's why it matters. And here's the historical context in which the data appears. Mm-hmm. So we're moving in that product direction, which is really cool. And I'm super excited to talk to anyone who's into like data sciences and marketing analytics, because that's like what all I'm thinking about right now.
Very cool. Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question. What sort of qualities are you looking for in people? Is it experience? Is it personality? Is it fitting with that culture?
Yeah. First and foremost is personality, really. Like, we want to, like, we all like what we do and we like showing up to work every day and working with each other. So it's important that we find people who are good members of the team in that way. And what I mean by that is, they're super empathetic people that know how to like have a good laugh and take things easy and not take things too seriously. And they're people who have like a high ambition and, most importantly for me, high learning agility, because I don't have a degree in any of this stuff, right? I don't care if you do either, but what I want is to know that you're going to be able to like work hard and pick it up, right? So first and foremost, personality and learning agility and ambition. Absolutely.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Well, Rob Bucci of Stat Analytics, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.